Welcome to episode 50 of Practical Defense, Mailbag. Welcome to the Practical Defense Podcast, where you'll learn practical approaches to staying safe in our increasingly dangerous urban environments. I'm your host, Alex Addicks. This week, I'm trying something new. I'm introducing a mailbag segment. What I'll do is I'll collect emails I've received over a period of time and discuss them on the show. If it works out, and I hear some positive feedback, I'll do it again. If not, call it a failed experiment. But before we jump in, we'll first hear a tip from our partner, Kristen Beck, at kristensguide.com. One of the most important things you can do to help yourself and the people you love is to get certified by the American Red Cross in infant, child, and adult CPR and first aid. Even if you've taken the class before, be sure to renew your certification to make sure you're updated to the latest first aid do's and don'ts. The seconds you save in medical emergencies can save lives. I'm happy to report that the listenership of the podcast continues to grow. The number of downloads every month is on a nice, healthy upward trend. Since I don't do any real advertising for the show, that means that people are hearing about it by word of mouth and finding it on the net and sticking around after they've downloaded a trial show. What blows me away is that I still get over 400 downloads of episode 1 every month. I'm just really glad people don't hold those early programs against me. Also, the show is downloaded in 101 countries now. I put a list of the countries and their flags on the podcast page on my site. I've received a few questions as to how I know which countries have downloaded the show. What I do is I take the download logs from each month and I run them through a program that translates the IP address of the person downloading the file into a list of countries. The program's called a GeoIP Analyzer, and there are a few free ones out there, but they have limited databases. I have an annual subscription to a database that's updated every month, so I'm pretty certain my numbers are accurate. Another thing I found really interesting are the devices that people use to listen to the show. When I first got started, there was one person using Microsoft Zoom to listen to the show. One lonely, dedicated, and much appreciated listener. iTunes was about 75% of the downloads, and the other 25% were all web-based. Since Microsoft finally added podcasts to their Zune marketplace, the Zune has really jumped up. iTunes is still the largest category with 70%, but the Zune is now 20% and the web is down to 10%. In another bit of news, Black Belt Magazine has posted a behind-the-scenes video of the DVD recording we did with Jim Wagner. The actual DVDs won't be out for another month or so, but the behind-the-scenes look is still pretty cool. I'll post a link to the video on the show notes. I'm also announcing a new corporate training program on workplace violence. Now, attacks and acts of violence at your place of employment can take many shapes. The FBI has four broad categories for workplace violence. Type 1 is violent acts by criminals who have no other connection with the workplace but enter to commit robbery or other crime. This represents about 80% of all the workplace violence reports. Now, type 2 is violence directed at employees by customers, clients, patients, students, inmates, or any others for whom an organization provides services. Type 3 is violence against coworkers, supervisors, or managers by a present or former employee. Type 4 is violence committed in the workplace by someone who doesn't work there but has a personal relationship with an employee, such as an abusive spouse or a domestic partner. Our first offering in the workplace violence arena is a subset of type 2, violence directed at employees by patients and families of patients. The title of the program is Assault in the Clinical Setting. According to the FBI, assaults by patients and families of patients on doctors, nurses, and other clinical staff represent the second largest category of workplace violence, only behind type 1. Yeah, assaults in the clinical setting outnumber assaults on police and corrections officers. It's kind of a shocker, but that's as reported by the FBI. The program we have is offered only to healthcare organizations and not the general public. Also, I did not develop the program. It was created by one of my masters, Bill Green. Bill is like a second father to me and is the person I credit with teaching me how to fight. He is now a retired sergeant of the U.S. Army, where he served as a field medic. He's a veteran of both Vietnam and Operation Desert Storm Desert Shield, where he served in theater. He worked for years as a psych tech in the psychiatric hospitals and has his master's in adult education, and he has taught and refined this program for over 20 years now. Bill's bringing me on board to his program, and we will continue to refine it and broaden it to other aspects of workplace violence. We're currently working on a book together and eventually DVD. And in the end, I actually kind of see it as being a series of DVDs since there are so many aspects to the subject matter. So if you happen to work in a healthcare environment, I have a program tailor-made for you and your organization. You can find the details and contact information on my website under the Training Workplace Violence tab. We'll be right back with our look inside the mailbag. So this week, I'm going to go over some emails that I've received from listeners, answer some questions, and review some scenarios from their personal experiences. Our first email comes from Simone from Saint-Denis in France. She writes, I enjoy very much listening to your podcast, and I wonder if you have anything to say about my bicycle security. I live in a not-so-good neighborhood, and one day, as I came home with my bicycle, I commute daily to work, a group of four or five young guys around 15 years old were staring at me persistently. I knew it was odd at first, but I thought they were making fun of my cycling clothes. As I went onto the sidewalk, they came up behind me, and I got really scared. I was very close to my home, and I fumbled for my key, and I prayed I could get in time. Oddly, they didn't do anything to prevent me, but as soon as I was inside and the door wasn't closed, they tried to come in behind me. I pushed the door with all my might until it closed, and then they couldn't reach me anymore, and they left. I still wonder what they were after, but, being young men, I think it was rather my bike they craved. So my question is, what are some preventative measures to be safe when riding a bike? Did you hear any reports of bike jacking? Would there have been a better way for me to behave? So those are some great questions, Simone, and I really appreciate you sending them in. And after some follow-up questions, Simone even sent me some pictures of her street where the event took place. She was in the city, and the streets were narrow, and the apartment doors are right up on the sidewalk. So first, I'm pleased to hear that she made it into her home safely. This gang of young men probably didn't have her as a premeditated target, meaning that they weren't planning on taking her before they saw her. It was probably just an attempt at what we would call a target of opportunity. If they'd really wanted her, they would have moved faster and more aggressively and probably gotten to her before she could have made it safely into her home. And as it was, she barely made it in. It's tough to say what they wanted, but the fact that they tried to get into her home was a very bad sign. They didn't want to have their activities on the street where everyone could hear and see, so they made a play to get inside where they could be away from potential help and witnesses. If they had made it inside, they could have done what they wanted for as long as they wanted. It's kind of really a horrifying thought. Also, it's easy to critique actions after the fact. When you're in the middle of a crisis situation, it's hard to think clearly, and your first instinct is to naturally think of your home as a safe place. Simone wanted to get inside, behind a secure door, and in her safe place. The question was, could she make it there in time? Fortunately, she did, but just barely. Had she been a little slower, had she dropped her keys or even broken the key off in the lock, it would have been very bad. My suggestion in this type of event, even though she made it inside, would be to keep riding. She identified these five guys as trouble as she approached her door. The moment she heard them move behind her, my recommendation would be stay on the bike and get out of there. Don't look back and just put distance between you and them as fast as possible. Call the police, get a cup of coffee, and check back later to see if they've left. There's no need to push into a potentially dangerous situation if you don't have to. It just isn't worth the risk. There's a great book I've mentioned on the podcast a few times, The Gift of Fear by Gavin DeBecker. He does an outstanding job of explaining how to listen to your gut feelings of fear. When your body and instinct tell you to fear something, it's for good reason. Listen to it and don't talk yourself out of it. The great thing about listening to your instincts is that when you become accustomed to listening to them, you actually fear less. If the alarms aren't going off, things are probably okay. You should always maintain your awareness, but there is no need to fear. However, when the alarms do go off, you can react and put yourself in a more secure position. Knowing about and respecting these alarms gives you a greater sense of peace because you aren't jumping at shadows. You only react to the things that are true threats, not the imagined ones, and you spend more time in a relaxed yet alert state. Now again, the book is called The Gift of Fear by Gavin DeBecker. It's a huge worldwide seller and has been translated into 13 languages. I don't have any specific advice for bicyclists. Good general advice that would apply to bikes would be episode 2 of this podcast or my two articles on parking lot safety that are online at taekwondotimes.com. Treat approaching your home door the same way you would when you're approaching your car in a parking lot. I had an incident when I almost seriously hurt someone when I was unlocking my front door. I'd just arrived home and I had my briefcase in one hand and the keys to the house in the other. I was facing the door and I was in the process of unlocking it when I heard and saw someone come up behind me out of the corner of my eye. Now, my front door is recessed into the home, which is a standard design on all American homes, so I was in a small cubbyhole with no place to run or move. I had a locked door on one side and two walls on either side. I was trapped in a 1 meter square box. I dropped my keys in my briefcase, jumped, and spun around in place and landed in a fighting stance with my back to the door, facing whomever might be moving in on me. Fortunately for everyone involved, it was just an advertising guy and he was out of my striking distance. I can guarantee you, though, that if he had been in my range, I would have kicked him as hard as I could. He really surprised me. And I must have scared the crap out of him. He dropped the papers he was holding, put his hands up, and all he could say was, "I'm sorry, I'm sorry." I have no idea what my expression was, but he was afraid to move. I just said, "It's okay," and then I said, "No, thank you." Now, I don't know about other countries, but in the U.S., marketing companies hire people at minimum wage to walk around neighborhoods at all hours of the day and even the middle of the night to place paper advertisements and takeout menus on front doors of homes and apartments. And that was all this guy was trying to do. He walked up behind me to put some stupid Chinese takeout menu on my door and almost took a beating for it. I am so relieved this guy was back as far as he was. If I had kicked him, I would have put him in the hospital for certain and maybe even killed him. Now remember that Houdini was killed by a fan who only punched him in the stomach when he wasn't ready for it. A full force kick from a trained martial artist to an unprotected abdomen can rupture organs. It would have been really bad, and I still shudder to think how close I came to really hurting this poor guy. Now looking at my actions, did I act appropriately? And to that, I would say yes, I did. I was in a confined space, in front of my home, on my property, and I was approached from close range, from behind, by an unknown entity who did nothing to announce or identify himself. Would my actions have stood up in criminal court? Probably. I felt threatened and acted to defend myself. Would I have still been sued in civil court? Also probably. But also, I screwed up. I was tired, and I let my awareness lag. I let my bubble collapse until it was almost too late to react. Had I been more alert, I would have seen this guy before he got too close and identified him as a non-threat and waved him off before he even got too close to me. My lack of awareness is what turned an innocent interaction into a confrontation that nearly put somebody in the hospital. The whole thing was entirely my fault. Now, going back to Simone's other questions, yes, I have heard of bikejackings. They don't make the news the way carjackings do, but they do happen. Now, biking is a popular sport here in Los Angeles, and you often see clubs riding the streets in groups of 20 or 30 on the weekends. Some people spend thousands of dollars on their bikes, and these are bikes either for trail riding or street riding. Anytime you spend that much money on something, someone is going to want to take it from you and sell it. The son of a good friend of mine had his bike stolen from under him just last year. Now, he was off at college in Northern California. It was a Saturday night, and he and a few friends wanted to go off to a party. They knew they were going to drink, so they decided not to drive their cars and opted to ride their bikes instead. You know, not the best idea, but better than driving a car drunk. Now, incidentally, in the U.S., you can still be charged with drunk driving even if you're riding a bicycle. Now, although it's not a motorized vehicle, bicycles are still governed by the vehicle codes, which is why you can ride them in the street and you can get a ticket for riding them on the sidewalk. But, you know, that's not pertinent to the story. So these college kids were trying to do the right thing. They rode their bikes to the party and had a good time and got plastered drunk. At about 3 a.m., they decided to head home. One of the guys jumped on his bike and rode off. My friend's son was so drunk that he was unable to ride his bike, so he opted to walk it home. Now, a few blocks away from the party, some guys jumped out from some bushes and rolled him. They hit him and knocked him unconscious and took his money and then his bicycle, and they left him on the sidewalk. He was found about 30 minutes later by some other people leaving the party, still unconscious, and they called an ambulance and the police. When the police showed up, they found his friend around the corner, also unconscious without his bike or his money. He thinks there were about 3 or 4 guys, and later he learned that this group had actually preyed upon 4 different groups of drunk college kids as they left this party. They got 2 bicycles and about $100 in cash. I'll tell you, my friend was not pleased when she got a call at 5 in the morning from the police saying her son was in the hospital after being mugged when leaving a party. Now, fortunately, he and his friends were pretty much unharmed. He had a nasty scrape on his shin from when they knocked him over his bike, but that was pretty much the most of his harm. I guess being drunk sometimes does have some advantages. Now, one of my recommendations is to always be inconspicuous. Do not stand out from the crowd. I talk about this on my episodes on travel and even car security, but it also applies to everyday living. Standing out draws attention to you, and often that attention is unwanted. If you want something that's nice and flashy, there are people that are going to want to steal it. This episode's going a little longer than I expected, even though I had some other emails that I wanted to cover. I guess I'll have to go over them next time. I'll finish with this one quick story about standing out. I have a friend who almost had the shoes stolen right off of his feet. This was back in the 1980s when the Air Jordan basketball shoes were new, really popular, and expensive. My friend was wearing his new shoes, and we all know how new, white, leather athletic shoes practically glow in the dark. They're almost blindingly bright, and you can see them across the playground. Now, my friend and a few other kids were waiting in line to see a movie at the famous Man's Chinese Theater in Hollywood. It's a world-famous place and a fantastic theater. He was in middle school at the time, and his parents dropped off him and his friends just to see the movie. Now, while they were in line, a group of much older kids approached them, and one of the larger kids got in my friend's face and demanded to know his shoe size. Now, fully intimidated, my friend told him his size. And the guy looked him up and down and then said, "You're lucky, wrong size," and walked off laughing with his buddies. Now, after that, we started hearing stories in the news about bullies beating up and stealing the hot-selling Air Jordan basketball shoes from other kids. And this is probably what would have happened to my friend had he had the right shoe size. So carjacking, bikejacking, and even shoejackings happen. You know, it's good to have nice things. It's your reward for working hard and achieving something with your life. You just have to be careful how you disclose yourself to the world at large. Avoid the flash. Avoid the bling. Avoid drawing attention to yourself, and you might escape the unwanted notice of the criminal. All right, that does it for this episode of Practical Defense. I want to thank Simone again for sending in her questions. I think they made it for a really good discussion. And don't forget to check out my monthly column on taekwondotimes.com. It's called Raising Awareness. So, if you have any tips you'd like to share with everyone, a comment on a show, or if you'd like to suggest a topic for an upcoming episode, write into podcast@alexaddix.com. I'd love to hear from you. Until next time, stay aware and stay safe. Well, that does it for this episode. Thank you for downloading and listening to the Practical Defense Podcast. For questions and commentary, send an email to podcast@alexhaddix.com. That's podcast@alexhaddix.com. And if you ever want to train with me, look me up on the web at alexhaddix.com. Until next time, stay aware and stay safe.